Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for June. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. This month, we'll be talking to Cheryl Cummings and Lynette Tatum about Coding Camp. Mika Paikala will help us get through the airport on our way to wherever we're going this summer. And we'll start the show by talking to Bob Hache about a new development in BSCB. Bob, welcome back to the show. I haven't had you on in a few months, but this time you're here because we've got some really exciting news for everybody.
That's right. Good to be back, everybody. It's been a while, and we're not going to be talking about budget or advocacy or anything like that this time around.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, for me, yeah.
I'd say so, yeah.
Anyway, what we're going to be talking about is Bay State Council is about to change our phone number. We've had the same phone number for a lot of years, and we decided to try something a little different. We're going to be having what is called a Fillmore box, and this box is going to allow us to do some very interesting things. What this is, it is a phone system, and you'll be able to leave messages as you would have with the old number, but you'll also have options by pressing certain of the buttons to be able to do some interesting things, and I'll read you what the options are here. First of all, I'll give you the phone number now, and this will be as of June 15th. People could call it sooner if they want. It's actually up and running. The phone number is 773-572-6312. Let me do that again. That is 773-572-6312. And when you call, the first thing that you will hear is that you can press pound to leave a message, which, of course, you can do. And the other thing, the other things that you can do are going to be in the following order in the boxes by pressing the various numbers of your telephone keypad. You have a total of 9 boxes. Right now we'll be using 7. We may expand to 8 or 9 at some point. Option 1 is about the Bay State Council of the Blind, which is a brief description of what the organization is and what we do. Number 2 is BSCB Calendar of Events. Here you can find updates on things like chapter meetings, our conference and convention in the spring, and our conference in the fall. Option 3 is a community calendar, which lists events of interest to blind persons and persons with disabilities in a more general sense outside of Bay State Council. Option 4 is BSCB chapter contacts. By the way, in case you guys haven't noticed, we now have an expanded number of chapters, including the Boston chapter and the Central Mass chapter. Okay. Option 5 is news briefs from the board, which is a summary of what actions were taken by the board in the previous month. Option 6 is Baylines, and we probably should call it Baylines Digest because we may not be putting the full Baylines on that one. And option 7 is this show right here that you're listening to, the Council Connection. And, of course, that will be, as the show is, that will be updated every month. And from anywhere, when you're in one of the minor boxes, you can press the star key to bring you back to the main message. And when you're there, you can press the pound key to leave a message of your own. And this box will be checked as we check our current box.
I think you can also do that when you're in the minor boxes as well, or in the sub-boxes as well.
I believe that's correct.
Yes,
I'm not exactly positive, but I'm pretty sure.
I remember doing that when I was testing out Council Connection.
Yeah, you probably can. The other thing I wanted people to note is when you're in one of the sub-boxes, if you press the 0, you will get a list of commands. You are able to actually control what happens when you're listening. For example, you can control the speed of the speech. You can control things like rewind, fast forward, and you can also pause and play the speech, which comes in handy if you're trying to take any notes on any of the items and you want to, let's say, pause or, oh, boy, what was that? Let me hit rewind. I can go back and hear what that was.
These are similar controls to what you get in NFB Newsline for those of
exactly.
you who use that.
Exactly. Or in some ways similar to controls that you might see on your NLS player if you're reading a book.
That's right.
Yep.
The only thing you won't be able to do is bookmark anything, but
No.
This is a phone system and we
That's
can't
right.
have everything.
That's right. And we're pretty excited about this. We're able to provide this at considerably lower cost, by the way, and that's another thing that I did want to mention. We are very grateful for all of the funding that we get from our various sources, including membership dues and sponsorships and the generous donations from our members, which is pretty substantial if you've listened to some of our treasurer's reports that come out in the convention. And this system is going to cost us a little less than half of what we were paying before, and we're getting a lot more because we get all of these new features. The other system was merely a box where you could leave a message, and then somebody would get back to you. And with this, is able to offer, you know, substantially more to our membership. And so that's the Fillmore box, Steve.
Probably one other thing we should mention, and I don't think this will be an issue for most people, but it is certainly worth knowing. Our old number was a local number.
For those in 617.
Right, for those in 617. And, of course, for anybody in Massachusetts, the costs would be minimal if you have long-distance charges on your phone. Now, I don't know too many people that do anymore, but every once in a while somebody does.
Yep.
And it's one thing you should be aware of, that when you call this number for things like Council Connection where you've got a 58-minute show.
Yeah, I would not recommend anyone that has to pay a toll call to dial this number. I would not recommend them using that to listen to Council Connection or the Baylines Digest, because then
right.
You could add up minutes that way. That is the only drawback, if there are any.
Will be putting a reminder in that Council Connection just before the show starts. You will hear a reminder that this is a lengthy program and long distance charges may apply. So at that point, if you want to, you can just simply hang up, and you won't have to pay a big bill.
That's right. That's right. Yep. And once again, the most important thing of all, of course, is our new phone number. The new Bay State Council of the Blind phone number is 773-572-6312.
Well, Bob, thanks for bringing us up to speed on this exciting new event in BSCB history.
All right.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
Very good.
Now let's dial into our Fillmore box and listen to the main menu.
Hello, you've reached the Bay State Council of the Blind. Thanks for your call. You may leave a message by pressing pound at any time during this message, or choose from one of the following options. 1. About the Bay State Council of the Blind. 2. BSCB Calendar of Events. 3. Community Calendar. 4. BSCB Chapter Contacts. 5. News Briefs from the Board. 6. Baylines, and 7, Council Connections. Please note, when in any of our sub-boxes, you may press the star key to return to this message, and from within the sub-boxes, press 0 to hear a list of speech control commands. Your call is very important to the Bay State Council of the Blind, and thanks for your interest.
Let's select option 4, BSCB Chapter Contacts.
The BSCB has 4 local area and 2 special interest chapters. The chapters sponsor social events and engage in advocacy efforts. If you would like to learn more, chapter president contacts are listed below. Boston Chapter, Frank Ventura, 781-492-4262. Central Massachusetts Chapter for the Worcester Area, Sharon Sterzelkowski, 508-363. 3,866. Charles River Chapter for the West Boston Suburbs. Ann Donna, 617, 926, 8,836. South Shore Chapter. Chris Devon, 857, 939, 0440. Guide Dog Users of Massachusetts. Carl Richardson, 617, 877, 1,248. Student Chapter. Daisy Russell, 781, 535. 9,366.
And there you have it, our new BSCB Fillmore box. I hope you give it a try. You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. This July, Our Space, Our Place is hosting a coding camp for students interested in internet design. Here's Cheryl Cummings and Lynette Tatum to tell us more. Well, Cheryl, it's good to have you back. And let's see, you were with us, I think, in April, was it?
Yeah, that was about right. I was here talking. You were very nice to let me come and talk about our program, Beautiful, which was for girls during the April break.
Mm-hmm. How did you go?
And it was it turned out to be a wonderful experience. We had four young ladies, all from Boston, mm-hmm. who joined us, and we had a great time. We really, I think, delved into some issues concerning girls and had some really honest conversations.
Oh, that's great. That's a very important part in the lives of young people. And, of course, you're continuing with that this summer for what, the third year in a row now with the coding class? Is that how that's – or has it been even more of them than that?
This is going to be the third year for the coding class.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're very fortunate that Microsoft is partnering with us, and they're going to give us space.
Absolutely.
So that's really good. And we're still recruiting students. At present, we have one student from Massachusetts and one student from Denver, Colorado.
Ah, okay. Well, hopefully by the end of June, you should have more. And at this point, we should introduce Lynette Tatum, the course instructor.
Hello.
So have you made any changes to the program as far as the – because you're the instructor in this, right? You're the one who puts the course together and teaches the course and slaps people on the wrist when they start throwing erasers. They don't do that, though, do they?
If they do, I don't see them. So, but, yep, I haven't I mean, my goal for the students is to give them, you know, an idea of what it's like. I like to say, you know, I am like the first grade teacher of this thing. And it gives kids, I just taught this to three young people from one of our New York schools for the blind, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them an idea to see. One, if they, you know, enjoy doing it. Two, how well are they doing it? Three, the consequences that ensue if they don't, you know, close tags and things like that. And but it also gives them the satisfaction, like, oh, wow. Oh, is that, oh, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
there's always that, oh, that moment.
And of course, I suppose, I know for me, when I first got into programming, which was a long time ago, the first thing that struck me was, boy, you know, it's an awful lot of work to make little things happen.
Yeah,
And I know that's true with HTML. Now, do you do other kinds of coding besides HTML, or is it all HTML?
It's HTML with a little bit of CSS to make it pretty at the end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So to change the font color things like that.
But you don't get into
that's about all we really have time for.
Yeah, so you don't get into any JavaScript or any of that kind of stuff.
We don't. Just, I don't take care of that, but Cheryl has someone lined up, I'm sure, to do that.
Oh.
Yeah, we've had a guy who people might know, Rich Colleger, who works at MIT. He is himself blind. And does accessibility for MIT and WGBH.
Oh.
So he usually comes in and sort of introduces JavaScript.
Ah.
Because as Lynette said, in a week, you know, five hours a day,
mm-hmm.
There's only so much you can get done.
Well, that's right.
And our goal is really to sort of introduce kids to sort of what is coding and sort of what are some of the processes you go through to code?
Mm-hmm.
And Lynette's correct. I mean, it's really wonderful to see the students go, oh, my gosh, is that how I do a link?
Yeah.
Is that how I create a link?
Exactly.
And I can put a table on my website. Or I mean, and even more fundamentally, like, I can actually create a website.
Go figure. Yep.
I mean, you know, and I mean, in the few years that we've done this, I've always been so impressed by the students. I mean, they show up and they pay attention. I mean, we haven't had like anybody who's been truly disruptive. Anybody who signed up and then after day one said, I'm not coming back.
Right.
They always come back and they stay. And usually by the end of the program, the ones who were truly sort of beginning students, and I've got to say, this program is really for somebody who's beginning. If you know HTML, if you're writing in Swift, and if you're writing in R, you know, don't sign up because you will be bored to tears.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, truly. But you know,
I really believe that about the first grade. My job is not to teach full-blown coding. My job is to show these kids, you know what? Here are some elements you can make, and you open up a web page, as Cheryl said, and look at that. Especially those folk, you know, those of us who use, you know, any screen reader.
Right.
Ooh, I can press H to go to a heading, and then this to go to there, that. And then along the way, you know, towards the end, make it a little pretty, you know, for folks who are visual. And even though some of the kids that we have no vision or low vision, you know, such as myself, and I can't really tell a red sometimes from orange and that kind of thing, the fact that they can do that and they can get that information from any reputable screen reader these days,
yes,
I think that makes it even more interesting.
Sure.
I think the kids like the links the best, though.
Well, because that's the real power of a website.
They're always, people usually end up putting a link to Google, and a link to YouTube.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if they're into food, a link to some recipes.
Absolutely.
But they are really excited when they're like, oh my gosh, I can create, I can like put links on my page.
Yeah.
And they actually work.
Yeah.
I was going to say that Cheryl, I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted, before I forgot this, when I was teaching just this, the few weeks that I got to sort of prepare, if you will, for your class, I was teaching another group of kids, and we could not, you know, coding is all about, did you get it right?
That's right.
You know, when you don't dot the I and cross the T and something goes wrong.
Yeah, one missing greater than sign.
This young man and I sat there before that time was up. We said, why isn't it working? Why isn't it working? Well, it turns out we listened, and he had two sets of HTML, then whatever it is at the top, you know, two HTML and two something else, and it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was bound and determined to get that young man's page to be right.
Well, and what people may not be aware of, if you haven't done this, is that you don't get any kind of an error message that says missing slash or, you know, nested tags or anything. It just doesn't work, or it works in a very weird way. And you sit there and you go, what the heck happened here? And I've done this kind of thing myself, and it can take a long time to debug, and that's what they call that, debugging your code. And because there are no error messages, you really have to do some very, very close, detailed reading. And all it takes is one slash where you don't need one, or a missing one where you should have one, and you're cooked.
But I just want to say quickly, I mean, we've been very fortunate that we've had some really good volunteers, because last year, thanks to our volunteers from Vision Aid, we were able to have kids participate who live out of state.
Oh.
And we were able to use some of the technology tools at Microsoft, which allowed us to share screens, et cetera.
Oh, nice.
So that when those kids, like if they hit a snag, our volunteers were able to say, show me your screen.
Yep.
And then together they'd go through and they would find the problem. And then I want to say the other thing we do, which is we invite in professionals who are working in the technology field. So so we really use all of our time. As I said, it's only 5 hours a day. So during lunch, we invite in professionals who come and talk about what they're doing in their field and how they're using technology. Some of them are folks who are blind or low vision, and some of them are just, you know, folks who are in the technology field. And it's really been an amazing way to sort of use our time, not only for the students to learn about coding and how it works, but to also get some information about like career options.
Yes.
And, like,
yes.
What do you do with this coding stuff beyond right. making a website?
Pretty websites. Now, have you found that any of your students have gone on to college and taken up in a big way, followed up on what they've learned in your class? Do you get any kind of information like that, or do you just not know?
Many of our students are not at the college ages yet.
Oh, okay.
So we've had some kids who are 13, 16.
Right, right.
And the older kids who've participated, I know at least two of them, I mean, they were already sort of beyond the beginner stage.
Right.
I know one young man is already working in the field of technology. And another young man, I think, would probably have ended up that way also.
Wow, that's terrific. So what should folks do if they want to get into this camp?
It's very, very easy. It's very easy. Basically, they could call the Our Space, Our Place office, and that number is 617-459-4084, or they could send an email. They could send it to president@ourspaceourplace.org and just say they're interested, and then we'll send them the forms to officially sign up.
And probably just put something like coding camp in the subject so that you know that that's what you're dealing with and not something that relates to something else.
Right.
Yeah. So, Cheryl, when are the dates for this coding camp?
All right. So the dates for the coding camp are Monday, July 9th through Friday, July 13th. For most of those days, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, we're meeting from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. And as I mentioned before, during lunch, we will have a professional who works in the technology field come and talk with the students. And we're very fortunate to have one of the founders or creators of NVDA who will join us on the Wednesday. And because he lives in Australia, we've adjusted the schedule. So Wednesday, we're going to be meeting from 1 p.m. till about 5 or 6 p.m.
Well, I thank you again, both you and Lynette, for being here on the show tonight and giving us the lowdown on what I think is a fantastic opportunity for kids in high school and maybe even a little bit younger to get a taste of something that they play with all the time. And this kind of gives them the realization that they can go into it professionally if that's what they want to do.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern.
If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave us a message in the new BSCB Fillmore box at 773-572-6312. Mika Paikala has probably done more traveling than most blind people I know, and as a result has spent a lot of time in airports. At last spring's convention, he joined us and shared his experiences and gave us plenty of useful tips.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for having me. My name is Mika Paikala, and I'll be giving you some travel tips, mainly about air travel, but we'll kind of go through kind of preparing for your trip, you know, the day of the trip, which was kind of the main thing I think that they asked me to speak about, kind of navigating in airports, and then some things after the trip. So I grew up in the Boston area, and in college I worked as a travel agent. I've also attended a lot of the Department of Transportation's Air Carrier Access Act forms, which is the Part 382 regulation, if you will, the ADA of the skies. Yep, the ACAA. And then personally, I travel probably about 2 to 4 times a month. So I'm out there flying, you know, so I see a lot of things and, you know, hopefully I can give you some good tips. Also, incidentally, there are different groups and, you know, online and offline around the country of sort of, if you will, travel enthusiasts who kind of, the idea is to maximize the value you get from your travel, whether it be through your miles or credit cards or other kinds of things. And they kind of refer to it as kind of being in the hobby. And there's a lot of resources that you can get to. I did put some of my notes and especially phone numbers or links and things on a website, and I'll give it to you now, but I'll give it to you also at the end. The website is bscb2018travel.wordpress.com. And if anything else, BSCB, like Bay State Council of the Blind, 2018travel.wordpress.com. And I'll repeat it. And I'm still updating some of the links over the week. Most of the information I'm going to cover is there. But I can, even if a question or something comes up, I can update it. And I believe WordPress lets you add comments or questions and things, although it's usable, but it's not the most accessible. But you can probably stumble through it. So kind of getting into the day of departure kind of tips and tricks. As I mentioned, I typically like to book the flight with the airline's website or app or calling them directly just to avoid a possible issue with a middleman, especially if it's kind of a larger travel agency, if you have weather or other issues. Another thing I'd recommend is getting TSA pre-check. That allows you to go through a quicker security line. You don't have to take out your laptop or your liquids, and you can automatically go through the metal detector instead of the body scanner. And the metal detector is much quicker. The body scanner, you know, even after you go through it, it takes a few seconds, you know, maybe 20, 30 seconds for the image to process and for them to kind of let you know that everything's good. So it makes security a lot more streamlined to get. Now, there are two ways you can get it. You can directly apply for TSA PreCheck, which is $85 for 5 years, or you can apply for a program called Global Entry, which is $100 for 5 years. And Global Entry also gives you expedited access back into the U.S. if you're coming in on an international trip, but it also gives you TSA PreCheck. So a lot of people recommend getting the Global Entry just because it gives you both. But it can be a little bit of a longer process to go through the Global Entry process, the application and the in-person thing, you know, where they take your fingerprints. So if you're mainly flying domestically, then if you do the TSA pre-check, you know, it's a little less expensive and you might be able to get it quicker. I personally did the TSA pre-check a few years ago because it seemed like it might be quicker, but I think next time around, I'll try the Global Entry just to get both. And incidentally, there are a lot of credit cards that will pay for that fee for you. So again, the program costs either $85 for pre-check or $100 for Global Entry, which includes the pre-check. But many credit cards, the way it would work is you would charge that fee onto the card, and then the credit card company would issue you a statement credit for either the $85 or the $100. It's mostly on high-end credit cards that have a lot of other benefits, but there's one card, which is the PenFed Pathfinder American Express card, which is actually a no-annual-fee card, and they cover the TSA pre-check or the Global Entry fee. So it's a no-annual-fee card, and you get that approximately $100 covered. Also, I'd recommend installing your airline's app and your hotel's app, you know, depending on where you're going to be staying, just so you can get things like gate notifications or notifications of delays. And it's good if you can play with the app before your travel, just so you know, you're somewhat familiar with it. You're not trying to learn it, you know, under fire on the spot. There are other apps, you know, like Flight Stats that you can use. But a really good starting point is your airline's app and your hotel's app. I really consider those a necessity, you know, being able to get your boarding passes and other things online with that. Also, just kind of having both a confidence. Well, I think a lot of people lose their confidence a little with flying and travel, whether it's just due to stress or anxiety, but just to have that confidence that, you know, you've gotten this far and that you can manage, you know, the airport and the travel experience. And at the same time, kind of realizing that you really have to be in charge of your trip. Like, you can't really rely on the airline to best help you or keep you updated or even, you know, do things that might be in your best interest. You ideally, in some of our travel hobby groups, they say, like, it's best if you can learn as much as you can about airport operations and kind of the way things are done, just because nobody's really going to advocate for you. An example might be, let's say there's a snowstorm and your flight gets canceled or delayed. The airlines have automated rebooking tools where the software will just rebook you on whatever flight it thinks would be best. But normally, whenever you're booked through automation, it's not going to give you the best flight. You know, if you're going from Boston to Baltimore, you know, it's going to send you through Nashville like 3 days later from now. So there's often a lot better options. And if you, you know, before your trip, if you kind of check the weather at your origin, your connecting city, if you're connecting in your destination, you know, is the weather going to be good, or is like another snowstorm coming when you're going to be flying, and just kind of plan around that. If you can, you know, look at what are the, let's say you're flying, you know, Boston for the convention, Boston to St. Louis. What are the other flights operating that day, like earlier or later, you know, especially on the same airline? So if something either happens to you or happens to your flight, so you have a sense going in there of, you know, what your options are for other flights. And, you know, ideally, if you can know how fully booked they are. Now, switching over to navigating airports, I've always, even when I didn't travel as frequently, you know, maybe when I traveled like once a month or a couple times a year in college, I never thought it was the best idea to kind of formally request airline assistance. I mean, I might get assistance from the public or from people in the airline, but I never thought it would be a good idea to kind of formally request the assistance and kind of always have it there, mainly because I thought it would be better if I could kind of learn where things are and kind of move around on my own. But also, just in hearing some of the stories of people, you know, using the assistance, that usually, I mean, there's exceptions, but a lot of the reports, you know, aren't that favorable. Like even Jerry's, where they gave him, you know, an extra piece of baggage that wasn't his. So I would encourage you, you know, if you have always used the assistance, to try it without, and just to see, you know, how the experience is. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you get no assistance or help. I mean, there's a lot of people you can ask and other things you can do without kind of waiting for a formal assistance person to help you. So to that end, I would recommend getting to know your home airport, which is Boston for probably most of you. You know, learning the terminal at the airline that you fly on the most. You know, it's no different than learning like a subway station or a South Station or the bus terminal. You can do that with a mobility instructor, with a friend, or even, I remember when the US Air Shuttle moved into a different gate area, I just went up to one of the agents and I said, you know, I'd like a tour of this new area, like, so I know where the bathrooms are, where the gates are, you know, and where different, and it was fine. He gave me a tour. And so your airlines, you know, can even do that. Or like I said, I've used a Carroll Center mobility instructor to kind of pick up on some extra tips in the JetBlue Terminal C terminal, where we did that last summer. So, you know, I would encourage you to do that, at least, you know, with your home airport, just so that you kind of get a sense of how it's laid out. You can kind of read, if let's say you're going to a new airport or even trying to look up something about Boston, you can often read a Wikipedia page or you can ask questions in a form, or like I said, you know, talking to a friend, or just kind of getting some sense of how it's laid out. Also, I use Aira as well pretty heavily on travel. So what you can use Aira certainly navigating when you travel, you know, to, let's say you're getting out of an Uber and a Lyft and, you know, you want to find the door or find your particular ticket counter. But you could also call them in advance just to have them give you some, have them pull up the website for the airport that you're going to be going to, and just kind of give you like the general sense of how it's laid out. So let's say if I was going to the National Convention in St. Louis, that's not a place I'm familiar with. I've maybe been there once or twice, but just briefly. So I might call Aira and just ask them to kind of describe the Southwest terminal, or how the gates are laid out. Like, are the even numbered gates on one side, or is it a circle, or just generally how is it laid out? And I might do it in advance just in case on the day of, you know, something happened with the connection or the technology, just so I'd have some information. I might use Aira again, you know, when I got there, but I would try to prepare also, you know, in the event that Aira may not work, which is, of course, how it always used to be. But just, you know, you can get a little bit more information in advance. Also, in terms of airport navigation, the Transportation Security Administration has a program called TSA Cares. And essentially, I'm just going to switch over to my notes here so I can give you the phone number. It's also on that website that I mentioned that I'll repeat. But essentially, you can email or call them and give them the general details of your flight, like you're leaving from Boston to Chicago on United, such and such a flight number, such and such a time. And essentially, it works a little bit differently from city to city. The TSA is a bit decentralized, but the way I understand that it works in Boston is that they would sort of assign you to a transportation security officer and then give you that person's cell phone number, and then you could call them and say, you know, hey, I'm just arriving in my Uber, and they would come and meet you and help you through the security checkpoint. Sometimes the most difficult thing can kind of just be finding, you know, where the security checkpoint is or where different lines are. So they can officially, they only help you with security, but a lot of times they would also help people to their gates or, you know, other Boston's not that big, like within each terminal. So, you know, even if you had to go really far, it's not going to take any more than 5 minutes to walk from one checkpoint to one of the gates. It's not like going through Atlanta or Orlando or something like that. So you can, the telephone number to book that is 855-787-2227. And you can also email TSA Contact Center at DHS.gov. Also, if you just Google TSA Cares program, the information should come up. I haven't personally tried it, but it definitely seems like it might be a more seamless way of getting assistance, and the personnel might be a little more, they are supposedly all trained on working with people with disabilities, so they might be of a bit better quality than some of the assistance you might be getting through the contracted companies that the airlines might use. And it also really strikes me that it's a good model if you just call them when you arrive, because it kind of bridges the gap of how would you meet the person that's going to be assisting you, which isn't really, you know, if you want to get assistance from the airline, you have to kind of find somebody. But this almost to me seems like a better model, that especially if that's how they do it in Boston, where if you just call and say, you know, hey, I'm here, all the door number, essentially at the airport, all the doors have numbers. So, for instance, like it might be something like C202, which the two means it's on the upper level, the departure level. So if you asked your driver, you know, what door number are you dropping me off at, you could tell that person, you know, I'm right in front of door C202, and they could come out and meet you. And then if something happened with that, of course, you could just kind of move on your own or ask for other help. But it definitely seems like a program worth trying. And actually, somebody from the TSA did mention it to me that it's available. So hopefully somebody can try that. I've also, Massport also has a general information number for Logan, which is 1-800-23-LOGAN. And they also might have a similar program where they can meet and assist people. I haven't looked into that as much. Somebody from Massport mentioned that they might have. I mean, I'm sure they have it or could do it. I guess it's just a matter of, do those call center agents, you know how to book that? But that's another avenue. The airport does have an extensive sort of public information division that people might be able to help you. Also, for the day of travel, I use, if I check my bag, I use something called Tile, which is like a Bluetooth tracker. And it looks like a little square device. That there's actually newer ones that are all made of metal, and they're waterproof and louder. I happen to have an older one with me, so I can kind of show you how it works. And the scenario would be finding your bag at baggage claim if it had a Tile on it. So I am opening the Tile app on my phone. The app is accessible now. It used to be more accessible. You just have to wade through more information now. So,
connection status, connected. Tile name, flight 001 backpack.
So,
connection status, connected.
It's telling me the Tile is connected over Bluetooth to my phone.
Tile name, flight 001 backpack.
I've labeled this. The brand is Flight 001, and it's a Flight 001 backpack, which essentially, it's a really nice small backpack, and the backpack itself can collapse into like a little pocket, so you can kind of fold it up if you don't need it as a backpack, and then you can kind of expand it. So it's kind of, you know, it'll fit like a MacBook Air or small computer. And it says it's nearby.
Last time seen.
And then if I hit find on the iPhone, or I believe there's also an Apple Watch app. And again, this is the old version of this is kind of a plastic version, so the new ones are a lot louder. So I pretty much use this every time I check bags, and I mean, with any technology, there's always a chance it won't work. But this has worked really well at the baggage carousel to find my bag. And I can even tell, you know, if it's nearby, you know, and so I don't even have to start looking for it until it gives that little update that it connected over Bluetooth to the phone. And then you can set the Tile, you know, to ring and locate your bag. You can also... when you're sitting on the plane, you can open the Tile and see if, when you're sitting on the plane, if it shows that the Tile is nearby, and that would tell you, you know, even if they did in fact load your checked bag onto the plane, that's not 100%. I mean, if you're sitting in the front and your bag is somewhere way in the back, you know, it may not connect over. So if it doesn't say your bag is there, it's not 100% that your bag is lost, but you know, it gives you a good indication, so that's a really handy little tool to use. The chime is coming from the Tile itself, so it stays at a constant volume. You can order them from Amazon or from Tile itself. T-I-L-E. And the newest ones, which are more sort of rugged and waterproof and louder, are called the Tile Sport and the Tile Style. I think the Tile Sport is the most rugged.
And it's like the high-tech version of the luggage locator.
Exactly, yeah. So again, they have probably 10 different types of tiles that they sell, so don't be distracted by that. But the tile sport is probably the one that you want to get. And again, it's all metal and it's louder. So again, you know, using your app, kind of navigating in the airport, and I want to get to now kind of dealing with, I think the way I put it into my notes was like when and not if things go wrong, you know, because travel is complicated and things, you know, will certainly go wrong, you know, despite the best intentions. But I want to focus especially on if you have any kind of disability issue. From what I see, just talking to people or on Facebook or other things, that a lot of people have day of travel issues, but they don't really do anything about them. So each airline under the ADA of the sky, the Air Carrier Access Act, is required to have complaint resolution officials or CROs present at each airport. Technically, they can have them available by phone, but I've rarely, if ever, seen them do that, which is probably a good thing. So they don't have like some offshore call center, you know, with a CRO. Hopefully, they will never get that idea. But usually, you know, it's someone that has other duties and jobs, like usually an airport supervisor, and they're supposed to be able to. They're supposed to be knowledgeable about the carrier's procedures, about the Air Carrier Access Act, and they're supposed to be able to direct other employees, you know, on what they should or shouldn't be doing. And if you do experience some kind of mishandling or disservice, they can give you compensation, which they're not required to. The law doesn't give you the right to any compensation, but they can do it kind of as a customer service gesture, you know, if they want to. So if you're having, you know, any kind of disability issue or problem, you should, you know, ask for the CRO. You know, sometimes they might tell you that they can't get one, or, you know, they should readily get one, but once in a, you know, they might say that none of them are available or something, you know, but you can just politely tell them, you know, that they're supposed to have them, you know, under DOT rules. And some, you know, are better than others. And I would say if you get one that you kind of build a good rapport with, you maybe want to ask them for their email address or cell phone number so that, you know, you have somebody directly you can contact in the airline rather than calling the 800 number, you know, if you have an unusual situation. Because again, the 800 number is just kind of able to handle generic things, but not really something more specific. So I can give you an example of, I didn't actually talk to a CRO, but I was traveling for the Ski for Light trip a month or two ago. I was flying United from Boston to San Francisco to Reno, and I checked in at the ticket counter and everything was good, and I had a couple of checked bags because I had ski stuff, and then I was going to another conference in Washington the next week, so I really had a lot of stuff, and everything went well. And I asked the person checking me in to help me get to the security checkpoint, and then I said I would be fine, you know, getting to the gate from there, and everything was good. And I got to the gate, and then the agent kind of came up to me, and they had added, what the airlines will often do is they have something called a special service request or an SSR, and often without you asking them or without them telling you, they'll add into your record that you're blind, which I guess if you are requesting the assistance, it may not be an issue, but if you kind of don't want that, it can be a problem. So I said to the agent that actually I don't want, you know, an SSR in my record. And I didn't ask the person at the ticket counter because everything sort of went exceedingly well. Like, she didn't seem surprised that I was blind or, you know, anything. There was no sign outwardly that there might be an issue. And then the agent said, well, yeah, I'll try to take it out. So that also wasn't very promising. So then I went up to board, you know, sometime during board. I didn't have that much stuff, so I sometimes like to board later on just to avoid having to sit on the plane for a long time. Especially, I'll get on early if I have a lot of stuff to store, but otherwise, often I'll get on kind of be one of the last people to get on, which is just a personal preference. So I went to board and I said, you know, did you remove that SSR, you know, from the record? And she's like, no, you know, it's required for security reasons, which a lot of times if someone at an airline kind of wants to make up a rule, they'll bring up security, because most people won't question that. And I said, no, you know, it shouldn't be required. And, you know, I haven't encountered that issue before. And she said again, like, well, we'll try to take it out, or we'll look into it for you or something. And I said, you know, actually, we've got to address this issue, like, before I get on the plane. Like, you know, we can't just leave this vague like this. So then she called her supervisor and said that, you know, they've got this person that doesn't want this in their record, and they told them on the phone that it was okay to delete it. And then she seemed really relieved, and as far as I can tell, she deleted it, and then everything was good. But it just, you know, goes to show, like, you have to advocate for yourself and, you know, tell them what you want, not what they think that you need or that you want. And it was fun, you know. It was a polite conversation, but I just said, you know, we're just going to have to resolve this issue, you know, before I get on the plane. Like, we're not just going to leave it kind of willy-nilly or vague. If you want assistance when you get off the plane, then it's probably better to have it. But if you don't want a specific person to meet you, then it's better not to have it. And if you don't want this noted in your record, you really have to proactively tell them. You know, maybe you tell them when you check in, and then when you go to get on the plane, you know, if you use their lingo, like if you tell them you don't want an SSR in your record, I mean, you already know more than 99% of people traveling about their little codes and lingo. So, but if you don't want the assistance and that's in your record, and then they send somebody who thinks they're supposed to meet you, that can create kind of an awkward situation. And it could even be difficult, you know, for this contracted employee who thinks that he or she is supposed to go and meet you, and then you're telling them you don't want that, and it just can create a lot of confusion. So if you don't want or need, you know, someone from the airline or the contracting company to meet you, then it tends to be better if you don't put that in, or you tell them not to put that into your record. And if you get to if you fly into a place like Boston, not a lot of people make connections here. I mean, some do, but most people, if you fly into Boston, are leaving the airport. So if you can kind of follow people, or even, you know, ask somebody, whether it's on the plane or after you get off, like, are you heading towards baggage claim, or do you know which way that is? And then that's usually the same way, you know, to get to ground transportation, you know, even if you don't have any bags checked. Yeah, so the Air Carrier Access Act doesn't require them to, in America, they don't have to pay for anybody's hotel for any reason, typically, but they can. It kind of depends on, you know, who you get, and you could ask three different people and get three different, slightly different answers. You know, but they should be able to help you, you know, get to the hotel shuttle and identify the hotel. A lot of times what they do now is there's this website called apaglobal.com, and they give you a coupon that has a printed code, and then you put in the airport code and then the coupon, and it shows you what hotels are actually available. And then you book the hotel at a discount. If, let's say, they're not paying for it due to weather, you book at a discounted rate with this third-party website. The company's called Airport Accommodations. And then you get a reservation, and then you get to the hotel. Like, for instance, in Washington Reagan National, they often use the Hyatt Crystal City, which is a really nice hotel near the airport. But, you know, you book it. You can either call them over. Actually, you can call them over the phone. You don't even have to use a smartphone or a computer, and you just say, like, hey, I'm stuck in Philadelphia. You know, what hotels do you have? And they would tell you, and you'd book it with them. But the weird part is that the hotel doesn't actually have your reservation under your name. It's booked with sort of an allotment of rooms that this company has in different airports, and they book more rooms if there's bad weather. But the hotel really doesn't have your reservation. So it's kind of a crazy world out there like that. So, and then even once in a while, if it's really bad and the airline gives you a hotel voucher, or you book through this airport accommodations where you can book the room on your own, it's possible, not that likely, but it's possible you get to the hotel and they might say, hey, you know, we're full. Even though I remember a couple of years ago, I was traveling to Chicago, and I think I had given up my seat on a flight and gotten bumped and gotten there late. And I asked them if they could pay for a hotel because I was there a lot later than I had planned to be. And they gave me a voucher for the Super 8 at O'Hare, and it was a big ice storm. And I went there and they said, well, actually, we don't have any rooms. And I said, well, you know, you've got to do something, like check again, like I'm sure you can come up with a room. And then they did. So that's another thing to, and that is not unusual, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, yeah, check once more. Okay. Like, where do you think I'm going to go?
With that, we come to the end of Council Connection for the month of June. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and if you have any comments or questions, please feel free to leave us a message in our new Fillmore mailbox at 773-572-6312. I hope to see at least some of you at the ACB convention in St. Louis this summer, and of course we'll have reports on next month's show about the convention. Until then, I'm your host, Steve Dresser, wishing you a pleasant summer, happy travels wherever you may go, and hoping you'll join us again next month for another edition of Council Connection. Take care.